I'm Christopher Springman, and you're listening to Body Language on Radio MD. Quote, "Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it." Well, that old cliche needs some updating, so let's try this. Knowing one's family medical history as a predictor for the future is a quality of life and longevity essential. Besides, learning family medical history is a great way to connect with your culture, values, ethnicity, traditions, rites of passage, and community, all part of your autobiographical memory, which is of great interest to our next guest. His name is Ozzy Grisman, a professor of psychology at Hamilton College in Clinton, upstate New York. Dr. Grisman, welcome to Body Language.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me, what is autobiographical memory, and how can we benefit from what you have learned about that?
So when it comes to our memories, we like to think of them as a very concrete process, something like saving a document on a hard drive, right? Something happens, I was there, and so clearly I can report on what happened because I witnessed it or I experienced it. But this kind of process implies that we know what it is that needs to be remembered. And that's much more tricky because any event that we experience can have a whole number of factors that may or may not be relevant. So imagine your friend coming back from a Broadway show and you ask, "How was the show?" And she responds, "It was great. I handed my ticket to somebody. I found my seat. The lights went off. Everybody got quiet. At some point, I went to the bathroom and bought a glass of wine. And at the end, the performers came around and signed T-shirts." Those are all correct answers, but that would be a very strange answer to the question of how was a Broadway show, because she didn't tell you anything about the show itself, if she liked the performances, or any detail regarding the actual main event.
Well, actually, you just said something very provocative in terms of storytelling and how people convey information. What you gave in terms of the description was a consecutive account. You know, I got up in the morning, I put on my shoes, I brushed my teeth.
Absolutely.
And the audience always wonders, okay, well, this is kind of interesting, but where in the hell is it going? So storytelling in terms of how it relates to memory, I believe, can be crafted with a goal in mind. In other words, get to the point first and then fill in information. Pretty much the same way people in journalism write a newspaper column.
Right. So I would argue that that process of how to craft a story is a learned process, and that it's not just about learning to tell a story, but it's learning how to remember. So in the feedback we get from our parents and from our peers, we learn what's a good way to tell a story, and that's going to shape how we remember events as they're occurring. We remember events to tell them over as stories.
One of my great interests is how parents can convey information to members of their family. For example, let's say there's a history of breast or ovarian cancer among the women in your family. And if you're an Ashkenazi Jew, it would be helpful, even potentially life-saving, to look into the prevalence of the inherited BRCA1 and 2 genes. Not necessarily to scare people, but basically to give folks in your family information that could be life-saving. What are your thoughts about that?
It's a really important practice. And that it's important that in a family a dynamic is established where talking about oneself and talking about one's memory is a normative activity. It's something that's engaged in regularly, because that way these things can be conveyed. They can come up in normal conversations, and that, you know, information can be conveyed to the children early on, and that they'll know the importance of something like that.
You have said that preschool age kids whose mothers often ask them to elaborate when telling stories, give them more details. Gee, how did you feel about that? Did that make you happy? Did that make you sad? Later in their lives, these kids were able to recall earlier memories better than their peers whose mothers hadn't asked them for extra details. What you're suggesting here is that moms tend to ask more questions about girls' emotions, but with boys, on the other hand, They spend more time talking about what they should do in terms of action, do with those feelings. Can we talk about the difference and why women whose memories are driven or linked or connected to emotion remember things?
Yeah, I would say that when we talk about memory, we talk about models of encoding and retrieval. So how the memory is stored in the first place, and then how it is that we get to it. The model that I'm suggesting is that because girls are taught to ask more questions about their memories, emotion being one that's been well documented, they have more pathways of entry to get to a memory. The more information that's been stored as part of the event, the more pathways we have to find that memory and recall it later in life. And so when mothers use more emotion language with their daughters than with their sons, they're effectively enabling their daughters to have more points of access to get to their memories. And that will later in life turn into broader tendencies and not be specifically about emotions, but broader tendencies that enable them to ask more questions about their memories and therefore access them faster.
You also talk about linking memory and emotion, but with events, and you refer to them, as you just did, as either retrieval cues or entry points. You tell your students, for example, to make links between the material they're studying in other parts of their lives and those other parts of their lives serve as entry points. This is really intriguing to me because you're asking people to associate and make connections between their lives and the material, which not only, I guess, drives memory, but it also gives people a reason for learning. Is that fairly accurate on my part?
I think it is fairly accurate, and I like the way you're using the word association, because we think of memory as highly associative, and that it's one thing relates to something else, which reminds you of a third thing, and so the more I can take my classroom material out of the classroom for the students, the more it becomes something that they might actually think about in their life outside of the classroom, and therefore become more relevant and then more remembered.
I've said for years that I have an associative memory, and it kind of drives me crazy because I'm always seeing linkages and connections and trying to reach back into that huge file cabinet in my brain to find a frame of reference. Now, knowing this as parents, and how can we consciously help to instill valuable memories in our children about relevant cultural and tribal events that are crucial to our identity as a people, because memories and those triggers may provide insights into future physical and mental health and ultimately longevity.
If we as parents see whatever it is we're conveying as valuable to our children, then absolutely we should. And since memory and identity are deeply intertwined, we use our memories to support a strong and healthy cultural identity. And on the flip side, our identity influences how and what we remember.
What's the takeaway value, Doctor, for the listener in terms of perhaps prioritizing memory by asking questions, being inquisitive, being curious, and listening to your children as they're trying to tell you something?
The priority boils down to what it is that you want them to walk away with. Is there a specific memory that you want them to really get, you want them to really stay with? If that's your case, tell it more often. Convey how important it is. Expand on the details. Talk about how it's relevant for your life.
Ozzie Grisman is professor of psychology at Hamilton College in Clinton, upstate New York. He received his doctoral training in cognitive psychology at Rutgers University, and his research centers on questions relating to autobiographical memory, including the study of memory processes that are directly connected to the sense of self. Dr. Grisman, thank you so much for joining us today on Body Language.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.